session number 8985, Reel 2.
Mr. Parry, Reel 2.
They have no B flight commander and they're anxious to appoint one, so you better be back by lunchtime the day after tomorrow. So, as you had to get to go through London to get to Duxford, I met people I knew and fell amongst thieves and decided to spend the night there, and I didn't get back until late afternoon of the following day, by which time they had, in fact, group had decided that they'd had enough of this nonsense, and they had appointed a chap called Dawson, Rollo Dawson, to take my flight, so I was flightless when I got back. Well, it's obvious that you can't have, if you like to say, a demoted flight commander flying in the squadron. It makes sense. So Charles Green said to me, "Now look, the best thing you can do," he said, "there's a big dance up at Wittering where we'd been for quite a long time. Now," he said, "I suggest that you take a tame Spitfire." We had a few Spitfires, although we were a Typhoon squadron. We were really non-operational at that time, but we did have a couple of tame Spitfires. He said, "You take a Spitfire and you go up and see Group Captain Embry." As far as I'm concerned, Group Captain Embry, who finished as Air Chief Marshal, I think, in charge of the of everything in what do they call it, shape or something anyway. Go and see him and ask him to fix you up. After all, you used to belong to Embry's Air Force, which the Wittering people were always known as, because we didn't always cooperate with the Royal Air Force. He was a dynamic, a great man, was my opinion, one of the greatest. Anyway, Embry. I said, all right, so I went up. We found two of us went up, a fellow called Johnny Small, who was killed later on in 266. He and I flew up to Wittering, acquired ourselves a room in the mess for the night, and attended this dance. And I saw Group Captain Embry, and he said, "Well, come and see me in the office tomorrow morning," which I did. And he said, "What's your trouble?" So I told him, you know, I'd lost my flight through, well, no flying fault of my own, but through being a fool and staying in London too long. And so he said, "Well, where do you want to go to?" So I said, "Well, we were in 12 group. I want to go down to 11 group, which was the metropolitan sector, you know, Biggin Hill, North Weald, Hornchurch, and you might say the action area, really." So he said, "Well, all right, I'll see what I can do on that. That's number one choice. Now, supposing you, I can't fix you up with that, where else?" So I said, "Well, all right, 12 group, because, you know, back to Wittering if there's a chance, you know, you're the CO here, and, you know, it's, I've enjoyed it here very much." He said, "All right, that's your second choice. Third choice," I said, "well, there's still, the Japs are doing raids into the Indian area, but it may have been Malaya or whatever it was anyway, that unescorted by fighters, and it seemed to me that it would be a very good idea if you could shoot down probably an awful lot of Japs, if you, because they would be unescorted, they don't have any much in the armour plating line." So he said, "All right," and he put that down, and then after that, Middle East, and then the final choice, I said, "Well, it doesn't leave anything else except Malta." So I was conned, undoubtedly. They were looking for people to go to Malta. I found I was posted to Digby, to 601 Squadron, which is the County of London Squadron, Auxiliary Air Force, and actually an Auxiliary Squadron. And when I got there, while I was waiting for the CO to see me, I noticed a poster on the wall said, group, what air council instructions and this, that and the other, what they say doesn't necessarily apply to an auxiliary squadron, and a check should be made. And I found, actually, I don't know, I suppose it was scrapped during the war, but you couldn't send an auxiliary abroad and without his consent. They must have scrapped it. Anyway, I don't know about that, but that was one of the things. So this chap was squadron leader, Johnny Bisdee, B-I-S-D-E-E, and I joined him as actually the senior flight commander. And of course, you know, in the services, it's quite funny. I think a fellow called Dennis Barnum was the other flight commander. I didn't know him at all. In fact, I didn't know anybody in that squadron at all when I joined it. Dennis Barnum was about 2 days less seniority than mine, but nevertheless, that's 2 days made the difference. Dennis Barnum, in fact, was a brilliant artist. I don't know what's happened to him now, but he exhibited in the Royal Academy when he was 17, I think. He wrote a book later on called One Man's Window on Malta, and I read it, and it's quite a good book. I don't think all of it is, it's quite right. I think, for instance, when he describes me as having big hands and feet and things, well, I've got very small hands and small feet, and there are that sort of thing. But basically, it's quite an interesting book. He'd just been married, and he had, according to the photograph of her, she was a very beautiful-looking girl, and she was the daughter of that time the general who was in charge, I think, of all anti-aircraft stuff in the country. I can't remember her name. Well, her maiden name. She was Diana somebody, and he'd only just been married, and well, when you get men together, you know, particularly we had a number of Australians in Malta and a number of Americans, and both sides were pretty tough people, and they used to sort of say, you know, well, Dennis, what do you think your wife's doing now? And I won't go farther into that. And he used to burst into tears and flee, but I mean, he shouldn't have taken any notice. There was nothing he could do about it anyway. But anyway, be that as it may, we then...
Was this the reason why Malta was such an unpopular posting?
Yeah, because of casualties. I mean, a terrible lot of people got killed there. I mean, I don't know. It's quite possible that you people would have records on that. I don't know, but the casualties were extremely heavy. And it was the worst time when we went out in March. I can't remember the precise date, but I think it was an unlucky 13th when I joined 601. We went from Glasgow, I think it's King George V dock in Glasgow, on an American carrier called the USS Wasp. And we had an enormous escort. I again cannot obviously give you the exact figures on that, but as far as I remember, we had two either battle cruisers or battleships, huge things. There were light cruisers, and I come to mind 24 destroyers. It was an enormous thing, because the story behind that is a part of the story of Malta, really, that the only fighters that had been taken to Malta flew off the old HMS Eagle. They couldn't take too many on that because the lifts were not big enough to put them below I don't know how many, I think probably they took a dozen. They had to stand on the deck, like you see aircraft carriers and things standing on the deck in their parking areas. But the, of course, they had to have their own operational stuff there. I'm not sure whether the Eagle did one or two runs. I think she must have been sunk anyway. I'll have to jump forward a bit if it's all right with you. I met on board this American carrier a squadron leader, Gracie, Jumbo Gracie, one of the true greats of Malta. And what had happened is they'd been all there. They didn't have anything to fly. Had two or three Spitfires left in Malta, a handful, virtually nothing, because they, the Germans just could do what they liked there. And he said to the air officer commanding, equally a great man, he at that time he was Air Vice Marshal Sir Hugh Pugh Lloyd. I think he finished up as an Air Chief Marshal. He's a marvellous person. Anyway, Gracie said, look, we have Wellingtons and odd things coming through here at night. Look here, I'm going to get over there and somehow I'm going to get a carrier and we'll bring a lot of Spitfires back here. And he was dynamic. He had, in fact, been the CO of 601 just before I got there. And the RAF or the Air Ministry, somebody had shipped him out to Malta, I think, to get him killed off because he used to write to the newspapers, which is strictly forbidden, of course. And we had some American machines before I got there, and in fact called Aero Cobras. They were lovely looking things, but they were absolutely useless. Everybody flew them, had engine failure probably in takeoff, which was a bit nerve-wracking. And they never actually did a real operational flight at all. They just did a rearward cover halfway across the channel. Anyway, Gracie wrote to the papers about it, and it was a terrible row, and they shipped him off to Malta. Which was in his, he was in his element then. I think actually the story went that he'd been allowed to resign from the Air Force over some incident in Egypt. He was permanent Air Force, and there was a flying display, and the old king before, who was the king? Fuad, was it before the last one? Anyway, he was supposed to be reviewing this flying display, and of course he had a top hat on and things. The story goes that Gracie tried to knock his top hat off with a wing. Anyway, he did something very naughty. And he had to get out of the Air Force, and I'm told he was the first man ever to get back in, get his commission back. When war was declared, he went and they let him back in. I don't know what rank he got back in. I don't know. Anyway, I can tell you he was an absolutely marvellous person. Well, he went back to England and he made himself very unpleasant, and the Americans finally agreed to lend this USS Wasp. But they said, you know, that it just had to be protected. I mean, there was no question there was no question of it being lost, so that's why this enormous escort, I think, probably went with it. I mean, it really was fantastic. When you saw it in daylight, we were lying astern to two of these huge things. I thought the Barham was one, but my memory's not good enough for that. They were really whopping great things with guns on, like you've got out the front here. And there is attached to that, actually. Gracie worked it anyway, and we had 48 Spitfires, but they went down, the Americans lifts, they could put them down, and they were slung off the hangars, the underground hangars in the ship, you know, like dinky toys hung around the place, some on the ground, of course. But they didn't have to, there was no folding wings or anything, you could. And I got very friendly with Jumbo Gracie on this trip. American carriers, well, all their navy is dry. They don't have any booze on board, although they had reputed to have 30,000 cases of beer, which they were going to open when they got back to Glasgow to celebrate the commissioning of their ship a year beforehand or something anyway. We didn't get any of that. So we used to sort of drink Coca-Cola and swallow a few aspirins, which had the same effect, I suppose. And when thinking about it, I suppose we were the original drug takers. Anyway, we played a lot of cards, a number of us anyway. And Jumbo Gracie owed me an awful lot of money. He owed me £15. And a man called Ken Pawson, who I got to know quite well, he was killed in Malta. He owed him £5. So Gracie said, well, don't think I'm going to pay you now because you might never get to Malta. So we said, what do you mean? We said, well, we might be shot down on the way. I'll pay you as soon as we land. And we laughed, but that's what the position was. And he said, furthermore, I shall be leading the squadron. He said, you'll be taking one flight. And to this chap Paulson, who was a flying officer, he said, Ken, you'll take the other flight. And he said, I'm pretty certain of getting there myself because you people are not going to let that money go down the drain. And we took off 35 miles north of Algiers. It was a distance of 795 miles on the course that we were going to fly. We went low level. My proper CO, Bisdy, went high. He went right up to 25,000 or something and flew there. But we didn't. We flew pretty well on, just above the waves, right along to Cape Bon, then round the corner a bit, and then cut across to Malta, because the Germans had fighters and what we used to call Pantelleria, I suppose it's Pantelleria or something. There are two islands, there's Pantelleria and there's Lampedusa, and I think the course cut between them. Anyway, there was no incident whatsoever on that trip, except we had to keep RT silence, of course. But I did call Gracie up because there was an Italian box kite flying just above the sea. I can't remember what it was now, but it was a biplane, you know, sort of quite a biggish thing. And it was flying, coming right into our course. And I called Gracie up and you know, I said, shall I wipe him off, you see, on the way? And he said, oh, no, he said, we'll just scare him. He said, there's plenty of these real things to handle in Malta. And truly, the squadron, we went up over the top of him. Boy, he must have been terrified. Anyway, we got into Malta, and I well remember going as we went down, we're circling the island. We landed at Takali Aerodrome. And that's what we called it. It's probably got some, you know, Maltese is a language which only the Maltese can speak, I think. But anyway, we called it Takali. And on our way in, getting down, there were quite a lot of lights being shown. This is daytime, of course, but flashing torches and things from all places, church towers. They did, in fact, have quite a lot of problems with I think Italian priests who were pushing out, they didn't realise, I think, that we were the quantity of people. They didn't think they were Spitfires. In actual fact, they must have thought they were a gang of Germans arriving, or Italians or something. Anyway, we reported all this when we came down. We were told to get out of the planes very smartly, and there were pilots standing there. They were refueled very rapidly, and they just took off because they knew that the Germans would have been notified somehow, that a whole lot had come in and would come straight over and blast them, which is what they'd previously done. So we got up, we had in some of our ammunition things on the wings, we had what clothing we were taking, and cigarettes and things, which were very difficult to get in Malta. And I don't know who took... A pilot then jumped in your machine as soon as it was refueled, and all they took off, and they just went south into, you know, towards North Africa, and the Germans came over just afterwards and plastered the whole place with bombs and machine gun all over the place. But in fact, they didn't do any damage to a single aircraft because they just weren't there. Subsequently, of course, they caught them on the ground and had very, you know, they were depleted all the time. Then A day or two after that, we went across to Lucca Aerodrome, which is the present main aerodrome in Malta. I suppose it was a civilian aerodrome at the time.
How do you spell Lucca?
L-U-Q-A. And there was 126 Squadron. Takali had 249 Squadron, and we were, of course, 601. There were a few hurricanes at an aerodrome called Hull Fire, H-A-L, one word, ordinary fire, second word. But I don't think there was a squadron there at all. There was just a few hurricanes there. Anyway, I remember the first occasion at Lucca that we flew. I think it was the first operational do that any of 601 had done from Malta at all. I think we were at Takali, but I don't remember flying from Takali at all. And we were in the dispersal place, and we had, I think, 126. I'm just trying to think. Gracie must have been 126 boss at that time. And he and an American ex-Eagle Squadron, I remember Jimmy Peck. He was been many flying hours. He looked like probably was half Red Indian. Nice chap, but tough. Gracie said, well, we better take two of you chaps up to show you the form. So my CO, Johnny Bisdy, said, well, we can't put all our eggs in one basket. You're a senior flight commander, you better stay, and Dennis Barnum and I will go with them, which they did. And dozens of Huns came over, and I suppose an air battle just went on. It was a sort of many times a day job, I suppose, overall, really, because the weather was always good. And eventually Gracie arrived back, and that was all. And when he came into the dispersal point, I said, where's the CO? Oh, he said, he's had it. He said, last I saw of him, he said, they were swarming all over him. So he's gone. So I said, did you get anything? He said, yes. I shot down 288s flying in formation. He said, typical Germans. He said, they landed on the sea in formation. He said, I watched them. He said, they got into their dinghies in formation. And I shot the whole bloody lot of them in formation. Now, that was Gracie. He said, oh, they'll be doing us tomorrow. He said, the only good German was a dead one, and he wiped them out. Simple as that.
Do you think it was true? Do you think it was
true? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very much so. Oh, very much so. He was a funny chap, Gracie. I mustn't make him into me sound a nasty thing. He wasn't. He was an extremely brave person and extremely competent. He'd broken his goggles. He used to always fly with his cockpit open because he said, you can't see through this perspex stuff. But it was, when it went up, of course, it was extremely cold. But his goggles were broken, and he had lenses in his goggles, so he was, you know, his eyes weren't really any good. But he said, that's a good thing. He said, I can't see fighters. He said, I only look for bombers. I can see them. And I don't care what the fighters are doing. And he had a charmed life. I mean, when he was sitting on the tail of bombers and things like that, I mean, obviously they were trying to do him, but they didn't. Oh, no, he was a remarkable person.
But he was ruthless, was he?
Hmm?
He was ruthless, was he?
Oh, completely. Utterly. I mean, he just believed that you got to kill these people, otherwise they'd kill you, which was, I suppose, true, really.
How did he spell his name?
Gracie, G-R-A-C-I-E. I don't know he was Jumbo Gracie. I can't tell you what his initials were. I think the highest rank he attained, he became a wing commander while he was in Malta, and then he was sent back to Britain, and where he was sent to one of the operational training units, where he sent for each of the instructors and said, you know, when did you come off ops? And some of them said, well, they'd never been on. He said, well, you can consider your going. I mean, he cleared out all the ones that had never had any operational experience, because his angle was they shouldn't have been sitting in a safe job, really, for any great length of time. He obviously accepted the fact that you had to have instructors, but he thought that people coming in from on rest from, you know, from operations knew the real score of how things were done, and these people knew nothing and really about true operations. And the real people should come and you know, put out the real gen on it, which I suppose is also logical. Anyway, I do know this, that he sneaked off, had a new uniform made, and he pitched up at a mosquito squadron as a new pilot officer with under a false name, and said that he'd been posted to the squadron, and they said, all right, where's your papers? Oh, he said, but they said they'd sent those. And anyway, he flew quite a few operations with these mosquitoes until someone gave him away in the mess and looked at him and sort of said, what the hell are you doing here, Jumbo? Pilot officer. Then he went back to his proper job as wing commander flying at whatever OTU. I thought it was 56, but I really can't remember. Anyway, I'd like you to know that I considered he was one of the three great men of Malta. He was a marvellous leader. Both courage, everything. He was subsequently killed in an intruder raid in a mosquito into Germany somewhere. I don't know, but his navigator was a prisoner of war, actually, with me in Staglov 3. He said that he had a cannon shell right through him from another night fighter. So, you know, I do know that he was killed. The other one I've told you was the Air Officer Commanding there, Sir Hugh Pugh Lloyd. He just instilled confidence into people, because let's be quite honest, we were, well, I can't speak for other people, but I think I could really say that everyone was pretty terrified in Malta. It's no good, I mean, nobody would admit to it, but they had to be. The odds were so much against you, when the Germans, who were, I mean, they had it like Heathrow, I mean, like planes flying around Heathrow or in out of Heathrow, they just came over right on the deck and fired at anything they pleased, and very little opposition. When they bombed, you know, sort of pretty low level, mainly Ju-88, sometimes Stukas. The Italians, when they came over, they flew at about 20-odd thousand feet in beautiful, what would be called in the old days, Hendon formation. But they were not, they were good pilots, but they had no spirit for fighting, really. They were good pilots. They sent a few fighters over sometimes, but they didn't count, really, the Italians at all. But the Germans certainly did. And old Lloyd used to stand outside. He would never go into a shelter. And, I mean, the stuff really was coming down. And I can see him today with a long cigarette holder. And he just used to look up and say, look at the sods. Look at these sods, you know, and things like that. Good heavens, get underground. What are you doing here? And go down a rock shelter. But he...